try. I'm gonna try. I don't know how well I'll do.
I believe in you, man. You can do it. Eye of the tiger and all of that.
There we go. We gotta get it out. Good evening and welcome to another edition of Bargain Issue Comics,
a podcast.
I am Adam, and that is Corey.
Hello.
Welcome to the fabulous world of tomorrow. I think it's just around the corner, ladies and gentlemen. We are almost to the world of Ghost in the Shell 2, Man Machine Interface. Like, really, do you need to, like, your name is so long. Just stop after the 2. Don't need to keep adding words. No. Ghost in the Shell 2, Man Machine Interface. And then there was a long dark hallway and they went down it and they saw. Oh my God, are we still, is it started?
I know it wouldn't happen, but I kind of always wished that the title would just start feeding into this long set of text that was an explanation of something that just didn't matter to the story. It's just like, Masamune Shiro just said, nah, I'm going to do this.
He just starts rambling. Not unlike our intros.
Bullet boilerplate?
It's okay. I've only been doing this for almost a year. $26.22. This one's actually made by Masamune Shiro. None of that other stuff like you get in that human algorithm business. This is the last thing he did before full on porn.
And oh my full God, is porn. He already going that way in this one?
I mean, we'll get there. 320 pages.
I know the exact panel.
Well, the first one had Not Safe for American Eyes in my edition. You said you got the porn edition, so anyway, yeah, Kodansha. This originally came out in Japan back in 1997, last century. This came out. You're probably going to get a copy that was published originally in 2017. I got that sweet, sweet Dark Horse action. So I'm all single issues and mangoes left to right. I bet yours doesn't go left to right.
No, it is the right to left. It's the, for our listeners who were in on the last episodes, it is the just massive three in one that Kodansha published a couple of years back.
How many pages is that bad, Larry Jerry? Do you know?
It's a lot. It's over 800.
Yeah, I believe it. 16 plus years old, and we'll cover that a little bit more in depth here in a minute. 7.3
caveat that, man. That sounds a little weird.
It gets very made for adults, and we'll cover why that's made for adults in a second.
Okay.
7.3 by 0.98, almost an inch thick, and 10. By 10.26. I don't know.
I just feel I'm obligated to say hey yo now.
It's the size of a comic book. Think of the comic book size.
It's the size of a profound statement.
It's not like an oversized one, it's not an undersized, it's the size of a comic.
Yeah. your average friendly neighborhood comic.
Exactly. It literally the size of a Spider-Man comic, not a trade paperback, not a manga. Not some like oversized deluxe library edition. There are a lot. There's way more to this publishing industry thing than I thought I would ever care about when it came to comics.
It is a fascinating little rabbit hole, but that's not what we're going to be talking about today. Today's rabbit hole.
We're here to talk about comics. Comics got to be produced and published somehow.
Very true.
We're vamping here because at the end of this comic, it gets fucking hard to talk about. So we're
vamping. My God, it does.
Full on vamp right now, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoy it. Tip your waiters and go to our Patreon. So the other stories are military crime procedurals.
Mm-hmm.
This is Magnum PI the Cyberpunk. Is it Magna PI might be too old of a reference. I don't know if anybody. Are there any?
Well, I think there's a Magna PI remake now.
Oh, there was vomit in my mouth there for a second.
Calm down.
How the hell are you going to do a Magna PI with Tom Selleck? He's not even dead. He's not even dead yet.
They are doing it. They have been doing it. Extent of my knowledge of it. Remember, Adam, capitalism demands money. And the easiest way to do that is to not have new ideas.
You know, the really awful part of this conversation is that I now want to check out the new Magnum PI.
I will do nothing to stop you. I will also not encourage you to watch it.
Somebody pointed out something that I can't unsee, that Chip and Dale is Ranger Rick and Indiana Jones together. The Rescue Rangers. It's just Magnum PI and Indiana Jones. Anyway, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the last thing that Masamune Shiro did before you have to watch it by yourself.
So, all right.
And I bet you're going to be like, you're probably not going to want to like buy this, like his sexy time books. Like, you'd get it in a brown bag and I don't know.
Looking around furtively as you walk out.
I can't stress that enough, that one of my favorite artists of all time stopped doing like legitimate, well, it's still very much legitimate, that's not fair to porn, stopped doing like mainstream comics and started doing porn.
I wonder if he made more money,
or yeah, I was about to say, was the money better, or
you never know.
You gotta do what you love. You know, if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. And if you love looking at your own,
I mean, it may be his passion. It may be his passion to do that. So it's like, you know what, more power to you.
I'm going to tell you right now, I'm an adult, and I went and saw these for art. I went and did this for the podcast.
For study.
So, yeah, it's still, and the weirdest thing is it's still Masamune Shiro. Mm-hmm. So it's very much like, oh, man, I like this. This is Ghost in the Shell. Oh, my God.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
That's a tentacle? Yep. There's five guys. What are they doing? Oh, my.
Yep.
It's really weird. Like, okay, so there's still like in military sim kind of thing. I don't know. There's a lot of different ones that he's done. He's done like horse girl porn. I don't know. It's weird. It's really weird.
I don't know. He was that prolific. Now I am both terrified and intrigued to go look.
Oh my gosh. There is. I mean, go look. It's looking under a rock, but look under the rock, because, oh my gosh, it's the weirdest thing. It is amazing art, but it's like, it's porn. Like,
well, Corey, all right.
So Ghost in the Shell 2 has this very, he's very, the women are all very scantily clad. They're digital versions of people, so they're completely naked sometimes, but mm-hmm. like, no nipples or vaginal area, but still very slim and very shiny. And I mean, there's at one point where a cyborg comes out of the water and she's just glistening with water and then proceeds to have a kung fu fight.
Yep.
Like she's like half naked. During the swim, she took off part of her dress to swim faster.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
at another point in the book, real quick, they explain a reason for women's dresses to change size. They say that it's very, he does a bullet point, not a bullet point, like an annotation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little footnote. Explains
why he's able to show more leg in one scene and less leg in another scene. It's just, it's very male gaze oriented.
It is not subtle about that. Let us back up some basics about this entry into Ghost in the Shell. Is very squarely focused on the major with some tiny cameos by Section 9 members, but it is pretty much the major doing her thing and wreaking havoc in the process.
Let's clarify. It's not the major. It's major mixed in with a whole bunch of other people.
That's true. Wasn't it like 18 different consciousness or something?
At the end of Ghost in the Shell, we see the puppet master and the major merge consciousness and become a new entity. They have not stopped doing that. They started collecting people and having them join. I almost think of it as a consciousness commune.
It's like a Borg minus the menacing aspects of it. There's just like assimilated into one amalgam.
It feels like it still has a menace to it. And I think that is part of later on in this series, it gets very hard to like keep up and like even like hold a place in your memory because it is so much like, oh my God, did I wander into a TED talk without like knowing it?
Oh, are you talking? Yeah, the last page. Okay, that let's hit that at the very end of the episode.
Well, let's cycle back. Let's talk about the art real quick. We've kind of talked about that it's sexy. It's very sexy art.
Yes, it is.
Two things that I really liked about it is that it's digital. He embraces. You could definitely feel him embracing digital tools. Mm-hmm. In this one, and it's a
testament to the actual technology between the 80s and 90s really improving. Now, one very interesting thing is basically all of the backgrounds, except for where the comic goes black and white for a bit, all of the backgrounds are straight up digital
and hyper digital.
Yes,
so it's almost jarring.
Like, I think that was intentional. The first time I read it threw me. And then I was kind of looking at it and says, I don't know. I think that was the point, to make it look like this.
I do too. And it definitely becomes, and I hate to bring the porn again, it becomes a very big staple in his porn. Digital backgrounds.
Oh, interesting.
Become like, oh my God, that's a beautiful background. And this is smut. It's just very weird. It is tasteful very
art.
Weird.
Tasteful art.
No, it is not tasteful. It is the raunchiest, like, oh my God, is she peeing on him? What is going on? Is that squirt? What am I looking at? I'm telling you, like, just not
secondhand hearing about this is just fascinating. All right, yeah.
I'm gonna
check it out.
Almost too much digital information in this comic.
It's very much an overload, especially when she starts diving into people's brains.
Exactly, with all the virtual halos that they do, which directly feed into the anime. The anime took all of the nuance and style of the digital world and ran with it. And I loved it because I thought it was a great convention, a great way of showing a digital self. Because that's a hard concept to sell.
It really is.
Such a basic concept since William Gibson and them came up with cyberpunk and the idea of like the Neuromancer Netrunner kind of idea.
Mm-hmm.
This visualization kind of, in my opinion, works retroactively in any kind of think of Johnny Mnemonic. Do you remember Johnny Mnemonic with Keanu Reeves?
Yeah.
It very like I even kind of put this on top of that. I don't know. It feels like that probably influenced this, and it's a big giant Ouroboros of where ideas go and come from. And I love it. That's sci-fi for you.
It's just one more thing on the kind of digital world. I like the fact that it is extremely disorienting. Like, it's not a clean space that Motoko Aramaki is in most of the time. Like, it's very chaotic, yet it is still, she's able to navigate it so well. It's odd just seeing it, because from my perspective, it is, wow, this is a tangled mess. I don't understand what's happening here. I'm not sure what she's doing. And it's just, you were along for the ride on this one. And it's just, she is clearly levels above anything you will understand.
Now, all of this embracing of digital technology, I don't know if I necessarily love it. I feel like it can be a little bit much. When the black and white comes back in, I'm kind of happy about it. I'm ambivalent.
I really wonder why that switch happened, because it was clearly intentional, because it fades back in and out of color.
Well, I think it has to do with the way that they do publishing of art pages in Japan.
Oh.
And I don't know 100% on that one, because it has to do with them going in magazines and things like that. So there could have just been some in that particular issue. The color pages were allotted to different artists. I don't know. I don't want to pretend like I know.
I mean, that may very well be, because you're not wrong. It was originally published in magazine form.
Well, the weird thing about this one, too, is the color pages are so long that it stays in color.
Yeah.
It goes out, because normally it's at the beginning of a chapter, and then it goes into black and white.
Mm-hmm.
This one goes into color, goes into black and white, goes into color. There are no chapter breaks in this one, whereas everything else Ghost in the Shell has had pretty much chapters. This one's straight stream all the way through.
Yep. I don't know if this was intentional, but the fact that it is essentially one long story is it very much comes off as stream of consciousness. And that is really what the ending, except for the part where it's talking about like the channeling agency, that's really what it felt like for me. It's just, this feels like he just goes off to a tangent sounds negative, but it's like it starts flowing and it's just, this is where my pen is taking me.
It's like he's talking to himself, which is ironic because there's a lot of duality and because there's another consciousness that tries to merge with the major's consciousness and it has all of that to it. And then you get mirror verses and similar but different kind of situations. So it's a lot of that interplay and philosophy about who we are and where we break down and other people come in. It gets a bit much. It gets a bit hard. Hard for me to even talk about. Not because it's like difficult. Like I'm getting choked up. Like, huh?
I have to admit. Huh? So I think one of the things that got me in addition to the latter half, or not latter half, but the later part of the manga where it goes in that stream of consciousness argument in the digital world is when the channeling agency, I love it as a concept that in this high technology world, that was really redundant. But anyway, in this world, there is also psychic powers. And I just love that concept existing. But I did not understand most of what I read when they were talking about that. Like, when she's going to find Motoko, it's just like, I don't know what's happening. So there's trees in digital space?
Right? Let's go. This is so weird. I'm glad you bring up the channeling agency.
Mm-hmm.
We're just introduced to a new character right off the bat, Tamaki Tamai.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked her. I think she's an interesting character. I kind of wish she showed up in other media.
So she shows up, and then immediately on the boat, there's a great moment where she's astral projecting to spy on the major, and she shows up as a tanuki. And a tanuki is a raccoon dog. I think they're real. I'm gonna show my ignorance here. I'm not 100% sure if a tanuki is real. I feel like dogs that look like raccoons got to be real. That just feels like that's a thing, right?
It might. I know, like, legend wise they're supposed to be tricksters and shapeshifters.
I get that, but is that based on a real ant?
It might be. You know what, that'll be something to Wikipedia later on.
But I did not think of this until just now. So that's Tamaki Tamai cosplaying as a tanuki. I don't know.
I didn't catch that either.
It's fun to me.
I love a pun. I love a pun.
Well, and I guess that this feels almost full circle. In the first one, in Ghost in the Shell, it's very much how technology makes us different than a human, makes us more than human, and it makes us question what a human is. This one, it dovetails so perfectly into the first one, in my opinion, because this one's about how a human, or technology rather, can be human, and what it is to be technology in a human world. I don't know. It feels like it's a flip side to it.
You know,
it's hard for me to describe.
Maybe a tiny example of that is the little, I guess, bots or whatever that are helping Multico throughout the story.
Oh, I love those guys.
They are clearly nothing but digital constructs, but they're very human. They all have personalities. She gets into arguments with them. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely like the Tachikomas as they evolve in the anime. I think that was a very interesting concept. So, no, these are kind of
living I felt like they were the Tachikomas. I don't know why I always felt like they were the Tachikoma's existence and she just picked them up and stole them.
Yeah.
Headcanon. I don't think
it's very possible.
But I like that. It makes me happy.
I kind of assumed it was because she's been merging with so many other entities and consciousness that in order to handle that load, she needs pieces of her personality or personalities off in their own thing, like existing and giving her feedback, but they appear to her as something that's separate. I don't know. That sounds insane coming out of my mouth.
I kind of get it. AI pet, but not a pet. Kind of a thing.
Yeah. Something like that where it's like, I need this to handle the load of everything.
Yeah. I can't do this by myself kind of a deal.
One thing that I really thought was super cool about this part of Ghost in the Shell is how she's able to switch between bodies across different places in the globe and able to like simultaneously control them. And I love how the comic switches between different perspectives of these different bodies she's using. But it turns out, she's in the middle of the Indian Ocean in a submarine. She's not in any danger. I just think that's very cool. And it goes back to kind of that identity thing. Like if none of these is actually the major or none of these is Multico, but they're all her, then what is the real one? Or are they all the real one?
I'm glad you say that. But circling back, she says her new name is Multico Aramaki.
Yeah.
Aramaki is sitting in the psychic agency.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't even bat an eye or acknowledge the fact, like, did she steal your name? Or she just, like, incidentally, she took another Aramaki? In the anime, you get to meet Aramaki's brother.
That's right. He does have a brother.
And maybe that's the case where she just got the brother. I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know.
Just the last name. Doesn't have to be anybody, right?
I had two reads on it. One was just that's something that's kind of the chief was just not surprised by or fazed by at all. It's just, yeah, she's the kind of person that would steal my name just to do that. Or it is because at least in the first Ghost in the Shell, she kind of not an antagonistic relationship, but she tries to get under the chief's skin a lot of the time. And I kind of thought it was, I don't know, maybe it was just her doing one more thing to needle him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's a good point. I like that. That's a good idea. And that's going in the headcanon.
It was like the major comes off as petty sometimes. I don't mind it.
Shira Masamune's character design, I think, is better than Junichi Fushisaki's.
Yoshimoto guy, because Junichi is the author of it.
One of those two guys did the character design. I don't even know who. The character design for the human algorithm. I that is why he goes so high up in my opinion of him as an artist, is that his, like, robot mech design, his gun design, his vehicle design, his cities, his really crap sack cities that he's able to do. the human algorithm is clean. This feels like the dirty, crappy city of Shira Masamune and I like it. I don't know. He has really great character in his place. I also really like Boxhead. At one point, there's a guy that shows up with a box head, and his mouth has been replaced with just like a speaker. that's so genius. At another point, sexy Multico gets into a bodyguard. Like the bodyguard, like his chest cavity opens up, and she climbs inside of it.
Oh God, that was so weird. That was
so cool.
I did not expect that.
There's a great Adam Warren did a story called Dirty Pair.
I don't know if
you've ever heard of
Pair. Yeah, I've heard of Dirty Pair.
There is a scene in Dirty Pair where it's very similar, where somebody uses another person as a bodysuit.
Wait, isn't there a bomb or something that goes off and she jumps in him or jumps out of him? I remember that one threw me, but it was like, it wasn't even the weirdest thing in this manga.
Yes, I think that sounds right.
Okay, I don't know, it's so interesting.
You're talking about Ghost in the Shell?
And yeah, in Ghost in the Shell.
I don't remember the part where that happens, where the bomb goes off and she jumps inside of it.
Maybe I'm thinking of something else, but
I think you're thinking of something else. Probably. So this one does have some not safe for work action in it. I also should say, if you're thinking about reading this one at work, maybe don't read it at work, because it definitely has some full nude action and a little bit of hardcore tentacle action, I guess.
There's straight up a panel, not the biggest panel, but there's a straight up panel where it's just tentacle porn.
Again, not like softcore porn either.
No, not at all. And, okay, so on that page, there is also a panel where the psychic is communicating with Motoko, and for some reason Motoko is decked out in this assault, I guess like black assault gear, and she has in her left hand it looks like a chainsaw, but I feel that's wrong. And it's just,
I think it's like confused. A force baton. I feel like force baton.
All right. That makes more sense.
I don't know. And I kind of thought that it was like maybe memories is how I kind of took that. Like that was her in another life dressed up doing that. I don't know.
Okay. Maybe. Yeah. I was thinking it was, yeah. All right. Actually, no, I can see that because of how it starts out. She's in a random library or something, but I'm sorry. I'm going off on multiple tangents.
That is 100% because that is easier to talk about than the crazy philosophy.
Everyone listening out there, I know we keep like beating around the bush and kind of saying the end is very much it's kind of a confusing mess, but it really is. Like visually, it is absolutely beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Masamune Shirow packs so much philosophy into, I want to say, at least 20, 25 pages, and it is...
Well, it's not typical of an anime manga either.
No,
manga,
it's not actually.
Even Human Algorithm breaks this mold. Manga usually reads pretty fast. Dragon Ball Z, Naruto, One Piece. You can knock out just a volume that has like, I don't know, 7 or 8 chapters in it. Mm-hmm. You can knock that out in an afternoon.
Yep.
With Masamune Shirow and any really Ghost in the Shell, you've got a couple of weeks, maybe a week or two to try and really, there's a lot of words on the page and to get your brain around what all of those words mean.
And that's not even including the footnotes that he puts in sometimes.
Oh, I love it. Love it. Teach me, baby. I want to know more.
I meant to ask
before I have one last thing that I want to talk about.
Sure, sorry, go ahead.
There's a live action Ghost in the Shell. Did you see that?
The ScarJo one?
Yeah, the Scarlett Johansson one, yeah.
I did. I didn't particularly like it.
The reason I bring it up is that there is some visual direct lifting. Besides the obvious stuff, there's a cool scene where there is like a techno artist.
Okay.
In the manga. I don't know if you remember it, where he's like in an arena, like it's a circular arena in the middle. There's like a lady and she's all plugged up everywhere. Like she's got plugs in her body.
Yes. Yeah. I think I remember now.
They lifted that scene. One kudo to that live action is that they lifted a really cool image from the manga. And
they got the aesthetics right. There are just a lot of other choices that I just don't think they should have made with that movie. I agree.
Yeah. A lot of choices with the story, lot of, and so I don't want to say that I love it, but I did enjoy it. And it had a lot of little moments for fan service. And I thought it was really cool that a moment from the second manga made it in the live action.
Just yeah. That's fair. It's not the one that gets the most play.
Well done. Well done. Because there are a lot of moments from like the anime and the first manga in that movie. But it was when they touched on that one really cool scene where it was like, because it's very gothic almost. Not gothic, but like dark techno is what it feels like to me, maybe.
Ooh,
dark
okay. Techno? I like that.
That's not a real turn of phrase, but it's a cool scene where like they're all kind of like in a commune, I think mm-hmm. is what it is. It's like a techno artist commune.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's a neat concept, and they use that.
Mm, okay, cool. All right, man. I think this was another good one for Ghost in the Shell. I gotta admit, I've had fun going through all of these again because it had been a minute, and it was just like, oh, I didn't notice this now. It's like, or oh wow, he snuck this in here too, or just like I said, tank battles. I love watching a cyborg fight a tank. I don't know why, absolutely. But it's great.
Absolutely. So, ladies and gentlemen, I think this is probably where we're going to have to conclude our 2-hour Ghost in the Shell marathon. Corey, before we go, is there anything you want to tell the folks?
Ooh. But wait, like you mean some wisdom, or was I supposed to remind them about something?
Yes.
You know what? I will say, okay. Wait, round it off here. Hey, everyone. If any of these episodes that we've done have intrigued you about a part of Ghost in the Shell, be it the manga or like a movie or the anime, please go out and watch it. Just check it out. It is awesome. Honestly a seminal franchise for cyberpunk, and I think it is just... It's one of my favorites for a lot of different reasons, but just check it out. See if it's something that kind of speaks to you, because it not only brings good action, but also some very interesting philosophical debates, as well as cool pieces of technology. And I think there's something in it for a lot of people to enjoy. Also etchy for people who want to do that too. Those are my words. That is what I want people to take away from this episode.
Excellent. Well, folks, that's it from us this week. Join us in our next issue of Bargain Issue Comics,
a podcast.
Bye.
Bye.